estate services, Lavazzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. I'm Adam and Crawl. And here's Kirby Bartlett's line.
Crawl.
Shut up. Here's Debbie Melrose.
Crawl.
And a rather more imaginative Mary Lang.
Shouldn't you say, don't make any sudden moves?
Good girl, Mary. I was gonna... Right then, once again, anybody viewing on the Facebook feed, we show, I have to say, I guess the least viewers, but we do it for the people we love. We'll see that I have this erection in the background. And it's an erection behind me. Yes.
That's what she said.
because I don't want to upset Robin Flux by having an untidy studio. However, this is my office. So I'm thinking of getting a little sign that says Man Cave and getting them from the range, funny enough. Right, later on in the show, we'll be discussing Fan TCCon. And I've come up with a plan to get people to buy tickets. Debbie, I think as you're one of my sidekicks.
Get some really great guests.
Are you saying we haven't got any great guests?
No, you have wonderful guests. I wish I could come.
Well, no, I've got a plan. What we can do is send Debbie around to people's houses and threaten them. To buy tickets for the
convention.
Or if worse comes to worse, get the stormtroopers from the Isle of Wight 51st garrison to go around in full costume and operational weapons to threaten people into buying tickets for the invention, a convention.
You ought to import Lillian to come and have people.
And how is Lillian going to get people to get tickets?
She's playing her legs.
She's going to put a stocking around her head instead of her legs. So I've seen it happen in certain 1970s BBC crime programs. Anyway, this particular fine Sunday evening, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be looking at The Power of Crawl, which is the latest segment. I was thinking of the word segment today, or the key to time, because as I was waiting for my working day to finish, hour by hour, minute by minute, got to the last hour, and I thought of each segment being every 5 minutes, and I thought, I've got 12 segments to go in the last hour, then it got down to the six, and I started thinking of this story. Ramble. Anyway, Lillian Robin says, I can't afford to come to the Isle of Wight. Wish I could. That's not an excuse, Lillian. That is a reason. No, it's the other way around, isn't it? Maybe both. But no, we want people not to have excuses. Just get your life savings and travel over from...
That's right.
Yeah. So Mary's doing it,
anyway. A lifetime experience.
Mary's selling her Mac so she can come over and join us.
That's what it would take.
Howes Enterprise College on the 24th and 25th of August. Right then, so yes, The Power of Crawl, the latest instalment of The Key to Time. I don't have to say to you guys, shall we catch up with what you were talking about last week? Because we did it last week. Makes a change. 2 weeks running, they're all here. So we begin with a title sequence, and then we have some very interesting actors from the history of Doctor Who appearing in the first scene. We have the bloke that I always thought looked like my granddad, who is in the what's that one with the prison one with John Pertwee? What's that one called? I know.
The Mind of Evil.
Oh, Mary's on fire tonight.
So of course I knew that.
Then we have Solon / the Warlord himself.
Hang on, wasn't I just about to go through the
cast? Yes.
Yeah, so we had him. He was the first one in. He looked like he had his arm in a sling because he had a sort of a cape over one side of his body. And then we had the green sort of swampy bloke who looks a little bit like Terry Walsh.
Happens to be Terry Walsh.
Well, there you go. Another person from the history of Doctor Who. And then we had John Leeson. Well, not just. Yeah, John Leeson.
Yes.
Unusually like John Leeson.
The first time.
Eh?
I said who we get to see for the first time.
Yes, and I wonder if he was deliberately making his voice try and sound not at all like K-9 in this story.
Well, you could ask him in August.
Yes, you could ask him in August, couldn't you?
Yeah, because that gruffness he was putting in there definitely sounded put on.
Yes. It was nice that K-9 was in there somewhere in this one.
Hang on. When you say I could ask him, the K-9 that's coming to the event is actually just K-9. It doesn't come with a voice, just like I say.
I thought you were getting John Leeson.
Did you?
No.
Where'd you get the idea from?
He said that we had K-9 coming, just the model K-9.
Yeah, you didn't need, as per usual, Kirby didn't read the blurb properly. It says K-9, and it says about the history of K-9, about him being voiced by the remarkable John Leeson, yes. Love the way you like to read between the lines there, Kirby. I kind of got myself into trouble there. Laurie Nick says, hello all.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, back to the story. Yeah, so they're wearing very interesting outfits. So I thought sort of a little bit Star Wars-esque, with the little sort of diamond-shaped logos on their tunics.
Yeah.
And
actually, I like these outfits on these guys. It looked pretty good.
Yeah. And they had these three, these obviously four men in the first scene, so you know the one you don't recognise is one that's going to get killed first.
Yeah. Where's his red shirt?
Yeah, he's got a blue one in this episode. And he's, yes, there's a low scene. They're picking up some things on the scanners, some stuff. And the one that looked like my granddad does a lot of snarling in this story.
Master?
Oh. Yes?
Yeah, that character is the character that Philip Madoc thought he was going to be portrayed.
It's Madoc. Okay, I mean, not Madoc.
Right.
Madoc.
Right.
Philip.
Anyway.
See, correct him. He goes all quiet then. I just Kirby'd Kirby.
He liked that character a lot and wished, and that's what he thought he was going to be playing. And unfortunately, they had already cast this other guy.
Oh, I see. I thought that.
And so he decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and be in this anyway, which is why we have one of the least impressive of his acting in Doctor Who, because it's
in
kind of bland.
In regards to who?
I would disagree. Yeah, I would disagree. I think he was the most interesting of the guys.
Who do you reckon has done the least impressive acting?
Philip, whatever you want to say.
Philip Madoc?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say his acting's least impressive. I just think he's not...
No, it's good. No, he's good, but it's not a standout character.
Oh,
not
I agree. That's, yeah, no, it was a bit of a weird casting. He was very too much in the background for the standard of actor he was. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I meant. Not that his performance was bad.
Okay. I let you off on that one. You nearly got a sound effect that comes to you quite a lot. There's quite a lot of stuff.
I think that his acting gave the otherwise really tedious scenes the only dramatic tension that there was.
Maybe so.
Again, I'm not disagreeing with his acting. I'm disagreeing with
you. You just think that he should have had a better part.
Yeah.
Okay.
He wanted the meteor part.
What was that? Someone, was there a dog barking there? Was that you laughing?
Dog. I have a dog I'm babysitting.
Oh, you're babysitting the dog? Not K-9, is
it? She's outside in my backyard, so I'm surprised you can hear her. Oh,
yeah, see, cute little...
Apple microphones. Apple microphones, everybody, yes. Microphones made by the Apple Corporation, invented by Steve Jobs, who I watched a documentary about the other night. It was very interesting. Yes, Apple, Kirby. Amazing. All right then, moving on. The TARDIS arrives in a field or a swampy thing with very, very long reeds or grass or whatever it may be. God knows how they got it in there without leaving some sort of... the crew, obviously, it didn't really materialise. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show. They do have to actually move the TARDIS manually. It doesn't actually really... Just in case anybody's in any doubt, it doesn't actually really, in real life, materialise. It does actually get moved. It's a camera trick. Okay, just to let you know. Don't want to spoil anybody.
Really? Okay.
But that in mind, how on earth do they get into that particular spot?
There's probably a path being down to where it is. It's hidden by the reeds.
I wonder if they used a crane.
Yeah, they could have used a crane. Yeah,
would have ruined the TARDIS, but there you go. Anyway, so that was just quite interesting. Anyway, so then... Romana and, of course, they put it there so they couldn't get K-9 out of it, basically, so as John Leeson didn't have to get paid for doing two voices in the show, which is a bit of a shame for him. So Romano and the Doctor clamber
for... No, Master.
Uh-oh, here we go. Yes.
He was contracted to be in every story this season, season in this case, but they knew that they wouldn't be able to move K-9 around, so they saw that there was this one part, and they offered it to him.
Good. Oh, I've got a... carry on, I've just got a message come through. Is there anything I really want to read?
Yeah, obviously, he's not very good acting in front of a camera. He's much better as a voice.
Yeah. Anyway, so they clamber out of the long reeds, and of course, Romana points the stick at various directions. Not much of a signal going on there. And the scientists, I suppose they're scientists, are they the ones that we were talking about earlier? They seem pretty scientific. No? Okay, well, I'm going to call them scientists.
Not really. Not really.
What do you mean, not really?
They're more...
Oil riggy.
They just run the refinery.
Yeah.
So the refinery people, then. No? Okay. I mean, if Romana goes off in one direction, like she did in the previous story, looking for signs of segmenting, and the Doctor goes and sits down, a bit like he did in the other story.
Yeah, he does that a lot.
And he gets shot at by the refinery guys. And meanwhile, Romana gets captured by some almost like sort of Indiana Jones type bloke, and a sort of Incredible Hulk that isn't very incredible sort of bloke. Now these swampies sort of reminded me a little bit of there was a story we did a few years ago now called The Ark, in which we had two half of the story. One half of the sort of one-eyed people were the slaves, and the second half of the story that everything was sort of switched, and it reminded me a bit of them, and I can't remember what they're called now. But remember they had the eyes in their mouths to make them look
mutants.
Like, what are they called?
Were they called mutants?
No, that was 10 years after that.
Okay.
Never mind. But anyway, But that's what they reminded of initially because of the...
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't remember what they were called.
Isn't it terrible? Yeah. We're supposed to be Doctor Who fans. So, all right. So Romana gets tied to a rock and...
Master.
And then what?
It's a stump. It's a fallen tree.
Well, I do apologise for that. I'm sure you can get... I get all sorts of emails about these sort of things. You can get these sort of things enlarged, Kirby, but I wouldn't worry too much about it. There's a shot of what looks a bit like an oil rig, which is a refinery, apparently. Unfortunately, it really does look like a model because of the size of the sort of puddle thingy, wavy things around it, which is a bit distracting. But they did go to some efforts to make it look real by... painting the lower parts of the what would you call those things, the beams that keep it up above the water, green with the algae and stuff. I thought that was quite clever.
Master?
Yes.
As I was watching this with Fred the other night, rewatching it, she noticed that you can see Crawl off, kind of lurking in the water in most of those early.
You sure that's Crawl?
Later on, when it does attack, it has moved, so you can tell that it really is it.
Oh, okay. Jeff Waddle says, replying to Lillian, "Start charging $1 a picture of your legs. You'd have enough to buy the Isle of Wight, apparently." Yeah, okay. That's implying the Isle of Wight isn't worth the same it would cost to actually come to the island. I mean, it is quite expensive in regards to the ferry trip. It's probably the most expensive part of it. So it's really the bit you need to save up for. Anyway, back to the story. So the Doctor does a very funny scene, actually, when he gets shoved into the sort of the room in the refinery and pushed over. We did a video drama with me and my friends many years ago in which I was the sort of tough henchman. And I was a tough Mr. Big, and I had this character, this bloke playing my henchman, who shoved a bloke into a room in the same fashion. I hadn't even thought that there might have been a Doctor Who connection with that, but it was quite amusing. And of course, when Tom Baker's Doctor, or any Doctor for that matter, is being bullied, it just becomes funny during the bullying. Everybody's gone quiet because they agree with me. Jeff Waddle says, is that Pertwee's cape on the hook? No, that's my M&S fleece. It's not as interesting as that, I'm afraid. I'm not too sure about Philip Maddock's weird sideburns in this story, to be fair. And bearing in mind that his previous story, the Brain of Morbius, was only a few years ago, he does look decidedly older, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Shut up then. I'm just stating facts here. And also, did anybody notice that Tom Baker is now wearing all sorts of brooches on his coat in this story?
Well, yeah,
I don't think about that.
It is funny when they all talk over each other. Never mind.
No, I did. I read a little interesting note about those brooches.
Oh, you did? Yes.
That explains why they're there.
Now, I trust when you say it's an interesting note, Mary, that it actually is interesting. So, unlike Kirby, I would say shut up. I think, go ahead, Mary, tell us.
Okay, there's a note in this one, book that I read about the different episodes. It says the three ducks on Baker's lapel are a witty homage to the quintessentially cheesy plaster ducks that boring married couples used to have on their living room walls in the 70s.
Yeah.
These were the
Ogdens in Coronation Street.
Equivalent of Slippers, Pipe, and Lawrence Welk.
Yes.
So, hey, aren't there some, Wallace of Wallace and Gromit have some of those on his wall?
Yes.
Probably, I guess that they were pretty popular.
Yes, they're very iconic of that particular era. We never had them at our... Oh, yes, we did. My grandparents had bronze ones. I just realised.
Yeah. What was the significance of ducks on the wall?
I've no idea. It was just one of those trendy things. Like that painting of the woman that people used to have in Britain and around the 70s as well. There's always something like Teletubbies and things that are popular for a short period of time that appear in people's houses. There's always something. Anyway, John Abernary's in this story, everybody.
Yay.
Well, excuse me. I was thinking of the title for Toby Haydock now. He's been on the show umpteen times. Excuse me. Something of the show. President of the show? I don't know. Anyway, Toby Haydock is particularly
Overlord.
Fond of... Overlord. Yeah.
Yes.
That's me.
Yeah, I like that.
He's particularly fond of John Abernary. If you listen to Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf. Which, how many of you guys have listened to?
I have.
Yes, Mary?
I have not.
Ooh, the point she's just lost a point now. I've lost my panel.
But I can do you one better. I've witnessed five. It's follow-up to that, which is my son broke my,
a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Who's follow-up? Who did that follow-up?
Who did it? Toby Haydock.
Oh, you saw that. But
he did a performance at Chicago TARDIS of that.
Oh, I see. Well, Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf is available. It was released by the BBC. So I'd source it, Mary.
I'll look for it.
Have you heard it, Debbie?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. What sort of Doctor Who fans are you?
Oh, yes. Fine.
Well, you've got it's staple diet for a proper Doctor Who fan is that particular thing. So please listen to it as soon as you can. It's only an hour long. Okay. Moths Ate My Doctor Who Scarf by Toby Haydock. It is easily available. We can download it from iTunes. It's very easy and it's so good, isn't it? And family member of the show, Colin Baker, is in it. I'm pretty sure he is.
I think so.
He cameos in it, doesn't he? Anyway, so back to the story. Sorry, I got slightly sidetracked then by Doctor Who fans lacking in Doctor Who fandomness. So Tom Baker does some banter, and then of course we have a scene in which I do love the sort of choreography that in these scenes with the Swampies when John Abernary sort of lifts his hands up and they all step back, and then some tentacles start arriving, and so we'll just fast forward a little bit. Oh yeah, they're about to sacrifice Romana. She squeals. Romana doesn't squeal very often, but she did at the end of that story.
Yeah.
The episode, I should say. excuse me.
She convinced me.
What, that she was going to scream?
No, that something awful was really scaring her.
Ah. Laurie Nick says, scatterpins. And then she says, I saw a version of that at Galley. And then she said, Toby is very entertaining. We know we've had on the show so many times that he's almost as regular as Matthew Kressel is on the show.
Probably just as knowledgeable it too.
Yeah, so like I say, there's Romana is saved by the Doctor. Meanwhile, John Leeson is fiddling around with his computer, where we see some very interesting graphics, sort of zigzaggy things. I don't know what
that's
supposed to be.
That was not very well realized.
But it was when they had the graphics, the same similar graphics of Kroll later on, weren't they? Well, I thought it was. I found it quite intriguing. He's quite a good actor, actually, you know, old John Leeson.
Yeah.
He loved having an opportunity to do some sort of facial acting for a change.
I would disagree.
What?
I would disagree.
Oh, dear. So the 2 points that Mary got early on in the episode just evaporated.
Easy come, easy go.
Well, you're not going to like my opinion of it, then.
Oh, dear. Oh, I can't be bothered. Right, then. There's a scene, actually, when I watched this the other day on the big telly for a change, when the Doctor and Romana are having a conversation about something. And behind Romana's head is one of those, you know, those sort of flamey, torchy things. And I sort of glanced up at the screen. It looked like Romana's hair was on fire.
Yeah.
It was quite a bad angle. Anyway, so it's a bit of stuff going on and plotting by the Doctor. And then, well, I see a little hovercraft. The little hovercrafts.
Trouble.
What?
Trouble.
Shut up. The little hovercrafts. The funny noise that they dubbed over for the sound. It was really quite funny. And then we had the sort of blatantly, obviously, split screen thing where they had the giant Kroll appearing on the horizon. I tell you what, I was quite impressed with that model. I thought it was quite good. I thought it looked.
Yeah, it was just a split screen.
The split screen didn't work, but the model did. Yeah. I thought it was really, really good. And of course, the old Swampies are sort of worshipping it and stuff like that. But one of them gets grabbed, doesn't it, and carted away.
One of them wraps himself with the tentacle.
They all wrap themselves with the tentacles.
Quite a few good moves like that. I noticed the Doctor right at the end does a couple of those.
Yeah, all taught by John Pertwee, who did exactly the same thing in Spearhead from Space with a smaller tentacle sizes everything.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent, wasn't it?
And then John Leeson's little computer screen shows the little outline of Kroll, which I think was quite good. I don't care what you say, Kirby, for the time.
Kroll.
I thought it was supposed to be some sort of sonar thing,
Kroll.
Isn't it? I think
jogging. It's like a little aerobics exercise, really, isn't it, that bit?
I don't know if Ian Kirk might be implying he sent me something. Oh, he has. Woohoo!
Yay!
Yes.
Good.
Okay. Right. So, as we're moving on. And I'm just moving to the end of episode 2 because we've lingered long. Oh yeah, that chap that I said was we were obviously going to die at some point gets grabbed by a tentacle, and or if you reverse the film
and obviously dies at some point.
Well, that's it. The end of the episode. That's him dying. The tentacle is just along one of the tubes within the actual spish. It's like I was going to call it a ship. It's not really a ship, is it? It's a sort of base.
It's a really really good. Model of a like an oil refinery. It's almost like methane they're going for. What are they? They're trying to mine something, aren't they? Some gas.
Oh, you're right. I think it could be methane, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, because they talk about the methane levels, and they're concerned that at some point the Doctor mentions that it's probably something to do with Kroll.
Yeah.
Methane. I'm telling you, over here we say methane.
Yes, because say it wrong. Anyway, moving on. Right. There's a point in which
I say it methane because I know I try to say things in the British way.
Mary, I say oregano. I don't say have to think about how to say oregano.
Yes, and I say shut up. Let's get on with it.
Yeah.
Right.
I say oregano too.
Be quiet.
It's oregano, and I get so told off for it. It's like,
well, you'll get told off for something else in a minute. Right then, so we have the Doctor, Romana, and what's his name? Harrison Ford. No, it's not. It's Indiana Jones. Anyway, they get tied to a rack.
Rome Dot or something like that.
What are you on about?
Yeah.
What are you on about?
Rome Dot, isn't it? It's Rome Dot or Rome Dot.
What are you talking about?
Rome Dot. Yeah.
Rome Dot. Yeah.
Rome Dot. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
The gun runner is called Rom Dutt.
Oh, what, you mean the one that looks a bit like Indiana Jones?
The one that the second they're tied to the vine starts going, my ankles!
Anyway, so yeah, they tie him to the rack. And that's quite an amusing scene as they tighten the rack up a little bit. The doctor's not particularly fazed. He asks about the window that's in the ceiling, which has been sort of wiped a couple of times really badly because you can see the wipe smears on it. And of course, they do the old ceremony of torture or whatever they're doing, offering them to crawl or whatever. Crawl. It's a point. There's a little scene where John Leeson's having something to eat. That was the first time I've sort of watched Doctor Who I've ever seen John Leeson eat anything. So that was a first and last.
would you find interesting? Oh dear.
So this thing goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And on and on and on and on and on. And eventually they escape. And, of course, John Abernary is not particularly impressed that they've put... His hair, actually, is quite funny. Everybody else's hair doesn't look too bad, the wigs. John Abernary's hair just looks like a sprayed woolly hat with some sort of bits of raggedy bits of wool hanging down the front of it.
Yes, it does. And they do all these close-ups that really show off that it's just knitted hat.
Yeah, the other sort of cast members' hairdos aren't so bad. Never mind. So Indiana and Roman and the Doctor head back towards the refinery. And I think they eventually make it. And, of course, Krull appears and kills another Swampy in the swamps.
And it's all because the Dryfoot's escaped. That's what they...
I do love that term, Dryfoot. Yes. I think Dryfoot's the sort of condition you probably want to get an ointment for from boots. Like that, but,
yeah, and Swampy sounds a bit like that.
Lillian Robin says, nice views of the Swampy's bums in some of those scenes. So now we know what to do for Lillian. Now she's got a Lillian's legs thing. Somebody needs to get some bums online. Jeff Waddle, I think, would be ideal candidate for for maybe setting up a page for shots of his bottom. Oh, actually, no, that's not particularly such a good idea.
Funny.
He'd probably do it as well. It's a trouble. Anyway, Laurie Nick says, Samoan influences via the architect. There you go. So, where are we now? I was moving on. Is it so the doctor? Yeah, so that's as the doctor and Romana are heading back towards the refinery, they observe Krull in the split screen. What?
Krull.
I just said that.
Krull.
killing people and scaring people and being big and stuff. I wonder if people hadn't watched the Key to Time before this, did anybody sort of get an idea that Krull was the actual
key? Yes.
Oh yes, oh, she would do, wouldn't she?
When they came out with the sensor and went, it's everywhere, and I'd already seen images of it, I was like, bloody big monster.
It's Marty Mountain Debbie strikes again.
No, I completely lost track. You know, I completely forgot that it was a Key to Time story.
No, the only thing that got me...
It did sort of throw you off that for a while, definitely. Yeah.
The only thing that got me... Mrs. Melrose person.
Comes up with it, I'm like, excuse me? That's right, this is a Key to Time.
Debbie, excuse me, Debbie, hello. Hello, yes. Debbie. The only thing that got me was... there was a scene later on the story, we'll talk about it in a minute, when the doctor drops the tracer and he's trying to prod it into the, you know, onto the thing. I would just touch the tentacle. Surely the tentacle's part of it.
Yes, yeah, he went.
You wonder why.
Head, didn't he? Yeah.
So they did say that it was a certain part of his body, but they didn't clarify that until they realised.
No, it was like he was desperately going for a certain part of his body whilst wrapping himself cunningly in tentacles. You know, it was, I was literally going, just stab the tentacle with it.
So anyway, my granddad, or the boat looked like my granddad, kills poor old John Leeson. But don't worry, listeners. It's only a part he's playing. He can still do canine. Not in this story. But the funny thing is, when the hero John Leeson is dead.
All he does is stand up.
Well, they drag his body away at one scene, and he's very much alive. You can see.
He's got his legs bent.
He sort of doesn't let his. He just bends his legs. He's been a bit like John Pertwee, and he was dead with his knee up, lying on his back. But moving on. Yes.
Speaking of dropping the tracer,
yes.
While they, you know, they did all the location work first, and during the location shooting, they lost the tracer somewhere in the swamps. Who knows? Oh. It may still be buried in those swamps.
No, something so for future had, archaeologists. I'm just so watching the scene of John.
That's going to cause it.
So I'm just watching
so
that scene when
they build a new one for the studio scenes.
I'm just watching the scene when John Leeson gets dragged away. He's bent his legs solid, unless his rigor mortis set in that quick. Papacy, I don't know. But he gets dragged away. Hang on, let's just watch his scene as it goes on. I have to describe it. So Philip Mallet drags him away. His top half of his body's right, but as he drops him, John Leeson sort of just pulls his knee up a little bit, and Philip Mallet kicks his foot away. Oh, so funny. Anyway, right, so so Kroll comes in and starts attacking the base, and I call it a base. I'm going to call it a base because it's now becomes a base under siege.
Siege.
The trouble is, it was one of the dodgiest little models ever.
Yeah. Ever, yes.
Oh, well, I don't care. It was fun. John Abernary comes in, and then this tentacle thing grabs him, or the other way around, reversed, I don't know.
That was a cunning use of reversing. That was rewind.
And, of course, we get the scene I'm talking about, the Doctor's trying to reach out, initially for the trace that they dropped, and then to try and touch the Kroll thing in its chest when he could have easily done a tentacle. The little segment appears on the stick with a big smile from the Doctor. And then there's a countdown.
It looks like a lolly, doesn't it?
The countdown started and stopped several times, didn't it? It went sort of back to sort of a larger number.
Yes, if we'd gone with the actual countdown, they would have been blown to smithereens well into that bit.
Yeah, but it kept on going 3, 2, 1, 20, 19,
yes, 18. Yes, 3, 2, 1, 20. I was wondering if it was going to do the 007 thing and end up on his number, but yeah. Nah.
And sadly, that's the last time we ever see Philip Maddock in Doctor Who. Very sad. Sad. And that's the end of The Power of Kroll. Yeah. I don't mind it. It's not the best, is it? Come on, it's not the best. But it's not boring. I mean, there are bits where they probably could have made it a two-parter. I think there are lots of conversations that weren't really needed and sitting around, standing around while they were sort of imprisoned and stuff like that. But I think that would have been a shame because then we wouldn't have seen three episodes of John Leeson doing some proper acting. Proper acting rather than... I'm being careful what I say because I know Mary's going to be horrible to him.
But necessarily.
Not necessarily him.
It's okay, isn't it? It's not the best. It's not the worst. It's okay. It's just Doctor Who fun, in my view.
It was a bit of a filler story, really, wasn't it?
It was okay. It's fun. I found it fun. Didn't find it offensive. Didn't find it particularly enthralling. Quite easy. I was sat watching it quite happily. But it didn't make me think, oh, that's brilliant Doctor Who, or that's rubbish Doctor Who. It was just Doctor Who, wasn't it? So what did you think about it then, Kirby?
This was the second time I'd watched it. First time was about 3 months ago. And I liked it better the second time through. I was kind of appalled by it the first time I watched it. And that is actually much more fun to watch it since I knew what was going on. And it didn't really bother me. Of the Key to Time, it's my least favorite. But still, it was okay.
Reboss Operation is still my least favorite of the Key to Time.
That's
so
one
far,
of my favorites.
So far.
That's, oh, and one funny thing is in the discontinuity guide, they were discussing this story, and they were coming. They also have famous quotes, and they said at the beginning of episode 3, they said it's almost like a couple of the characters were commenting about the story so far, mm-hmm. when they're looking at the screen and they're going, "It hasn't moved for 15 minutes."
Oh,
the story.
Yes.
Okay. Is that it, Kirby? Are you still carrying on?
No, go ahead.
You're done, okay. Okay, then. Debbie, you hadn't seen this before, had you?
Never had, and I...
Oh, you nearly had it, because you nearly had my Key to Time series until I realised I gave him the wrong one.
I haven't seen this one because I knew we were coming up to it. So, yeah, I was saving this. And
were you
able to watch
the foreign versions that I did, in fact, give you in the end?
Yes, I have.
How did you manage that? Is that by having a special filter on your...
No, I have a PlayStation.
I didn't know they were region 3.
That can take different zones. So
that's
fine.
Cool then. So what did you think of it?
Is that true for all PlayStations?
No, not all PlayStations.
All PlayStations. Oh. So what do you think of about it then, Debbie?
I liked Kirby's term, appalled. That was, it felt like a filler that went on for way too long. I mean, we spent how long on each scene? It was Doctor Who, as you say. It was Doctor Who. It was okay, but it really did feel like this is a filler episode because we're going to get to a really good one next. You know, that sort of thing.
I'm not guaranteed about that because I can't remember. We'll have to wait and see.
I'll let you know next week what I think about that. But I felt also the whole idea of, you know, Swampies versus Dryfoots was sort of shoehorned back in as kind of a right sort of towards the end of episode 3, beginning episode 4 was. You know, they have rights too, and then he got shot for his trouble. You know, it was kind of trying to make a commentary on racism and bringing that into it, but it was almost out of place because by then we'd sort of established that, you know, he was a bigot, he wasn't, he's a bigot in his race, you know, that sort of thing. But I thought the one thing that really held it together in this story was Romana. She was brilliant. She was just sarcastic throughout.
Bless her. Bless lovely Mary Tam.
She was really... She's been absolutely up there as a companion because I wasn't really aware of Mary Tam as Romana. I've read, you know, her stories in the books, and I've listened to a couple of audio books as well with her as the as Romana. And
did you listen to the Big Finish stories?
Yes,
I was going to mention that, Mary, because she passed away. But I'm so glad she got a chance to do a couple of Big Finish stories with Tom Baker before she did.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd sort of done a little bit of research when I realised she was coming up as a companion, but I hadn't actually seen her like this. And she held this whole story together just by going, what, all the way through. She was basically us going... Come on, we're still here. Okay, yes, we're still here. I don't think my vertebrae can hang in much longer, you know, that sort of thing. She was basically almost being the doctor in this one. He almost took a back seat for some of these scenes.
Oh, Mary won't like that. Don't say that, please.
Well, it did feel like that. It felt he was almost letting her lead this one. You know, it's like, yeah, we're leaving K9 behind. It's just you and me. Here we go. So, yeah, and it's trying to almost display how much he's trusting her, but it really did hold the whole thing together. But other than that, I didn't really care for this as a story. But as Kirby said, it probably could stand another watch. I've seen it twice, but I'm still not au fait.
I've seen it more than twice and still the same. Nothing had any...
Fair enough. Looking forward to the next one, see what happens then.
Okay. Mary, what did you... Hang on, whoa there.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Nelly. Sit back, everyone.
I would rename this story called Much Ado About Squid Farts.
Squid farts?
Yeah, where do you think they're getting the methane?
Yeah, exactly.
This feels like a story that when you show it to someone who's not a Doctor Who fan would never understand why anyone would be a Doctor Who fan, because it's got all the typical things that people criticize. It's got the cheap and wobbly sets. It's got the less than great acting, and it's got long scenes of people standing around talking. Episodes 2 and 3 have these lengthy scenes of everybody just standing there staring at computer screens, you know, and commenting on what they're looking at it. And even the displays on the screens are not very well done. I was
1978.
I was curious that the Swampies in episode 1 don't even know how to sign a document. You know, they come across as illiterate. And yet the doctor finds this incredibly elaborately written Bible of sorts, you know, that he's reading up on the history of the Swampies, where they come from and, you know, how the Krull got, you know, so big. So I'm wondering, are they really illiterate, or is it just the leader who knows everything that's in that book and he's kept everybody else ignorant, which I find is consistent with how the whole story seems to be a comment on religious fanaticism. Because it's like they've never seen this creature, but they've got this leader who's telling them all about it and knows all the rules, and they're just blindly following him and doing everything he says. So I saw this whole thing as a comment on religious fanaticism, which I think is consistent with Robert Holmes's dislike of religion. What was it going to say? Oh, and something else that I did read is that this was the first story in January following a lengthy Christmas break, you know, for all the Christmas shows that the BBC puts on. And so the producers felt like they needed to put in there something to kind of catch everybody up to this being, you know, still part of the Key to Time series, which is why we have been talking about it so much. And then a comment I have to make on, you know, not only were these dull expository scenes going on, people just standing there talking, but did you notice how the beginning of every episode gives you a good 5 or more minutes of the previous episode, you know, just to fill time? I think it could have been cut down to 3, possibly 2 episodes to make it better. So, yeah, I really did not think well of this one at all. I hope that the next one will be better.
Well, don't hope too much. I can't remember what it was like, so we'll find out, won't we? Okay. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Right then, we had a bit of Ian Kirk basically on the thread posted his script that we're going to listen to later on. It's a bit of a shame because everybody who's on the thread and watching this particular live feed knows what's going to come up with Ian Kirk's. But never mind. And then replying to Ian Kirk, I think it's Jeff Waddle says, "Nice rack." And then and then we said about, it was Lillian Minot, we're talking about the Swampy's bums. And then Laurie Nick said, "Method acting." And then Ian Kirk, replying to Ian again, when Rome Dutt has a reed in his mouth, he is chewing the scenery.
Did you read Laurie's comment?
I'm getting to that. Laurie said, "Now I need to re-watch Romana in this one. I didn't see her as an active participant as Debbie did. I mean, she's getting better, but she still doesn't fight back."
Yeah, I tend to agree with Laurie. I didn't see Romana as being that active in this one.
Okay, so there you go.
It was more performance more than anything. Just kept the ball bowling.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, right then, so we can indeed move on to a bit of feedback while Kirby tries to find anything entered on his request on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. That would be useful while I play this particular feature from a long time feedback participant.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
There are a lot of important questions yet to be answered. The Power of Crawl by Robert Holmes. The Doctor helps to save the oppressed from a heartless mineral extraction company. It is not easy being green. This time, Mary Tam's lucky colour is brown. Robert Holmes managed to make the segment of The Key to Time be part of the resolution to the story, rather than be incidental. At the end, the Doctor stretches to reach the body of Crawl, instead of using the detector on the tentacle around his neck. He's just showing off the longer arms he got, thanks to the Swampy's seventh ritual. I've not seen this since the original broadcast, and all I remember is a scene where the drying vines are stretching the Doctor. I think those Swampies were jealous of the refinery crew. Green with envy. Bye for now.
That was Ian Kirk, everyone. Okay, Kirby, what have you come up with?
Oh, Laurie Nix, her main comment was there on the Facebook group. Scatterpins and wellies down on the bayou equals a tentacle up your pipeline. Incidentally, I didn't miss K-9 in this episode, as we've had too much dog whistle to the rescue lately. It's been a really long time since I'd seen this, and it was surprisingly better than I recalled, mainly because it contrasts from the running about in fancy dress we see for much of the key time episodes. Not that my expectations were high, mind you. If viewed as a muddy palate cleanser, it's perfectly enjoyable. At least this alien world is sort of alien-ish and not some medieval mishmash. Green, scantily clad Cthulhu worshippers are always a plus. There's a sense of Romana warming up to the Doctor, but I wish they had taken it further in regards to her actually participating in these adventures. It will take Romana, too, to get there. I think by this point in the series, I have grown tired of her baby Time Lord passivity.
Okay. Nevertheless, steady on.
She wore the right shoes this time around.
Yay! Willies.
She's learning.
And I commented that I pointed out the piece of music that the Doctor was playing on his little reed flute, which was the Bad Neri from Bach's Orchestral Suite Number 2 in B minor, BWV 1067.
Yeah, all right.
Lore pointed out Americans might recognize it from the Deep Sea Cable Create channel. Deep Sea. Why did I say Deep Sea? From the Deep Cable.
Oh, God. I sometimes wish I had never asked. Go on.
They use an a cappella version as a bumper between programming. It's a Baroque earworm. And I then posted a picture of how I first heard that piece.
Oh, we carry on. Sorry.
Good one.
Keep anyway, going, Kirby.
Yes, thank you for that. I
had a record of it when I was like 5.
What, left bank too?
Then Jeff Waddle said the natives are wearing Lillian Robbins tights. Lillian responds, saying, actually, I was hoping their loincloths would get dislodged.
Lillian!
And then Lillian gives her opinion of the story. One word, silly.
Okay. Yeah.
Debbie Morrow's has been posted a particular piece of text.
We have, yes. Wonder who it could be from. The Swamps of Androzani, or I can't say the word Magna, of the third moon of Delta Magna. I think I'll try. Archituthdi Magna.
Oh,
thank you, Alachi Butcher. Of the third moon of Delta Magna. Dear 20 megabyters, this good start already.
Yeah.
The Path of Krall is, of course, a closely studied examination of the exploitation of the North American continent and the attitude taken to the indigenous population from the lands containing resources, which were taken with flagrant disregard to those indigenes. Krall clearly represents the land itself, held in reverence by the green indigenes, but as it happens, the cause of attracting the exploiters in the first place. Yes. What did you call them? Squid farts. That was it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They may have been better off draining the swamp, building a wall around it, and making Delta Magna great again instead. It should be noted that while some suggest the Swampies are a ridiculous-looking attempt to represent an alien species, in fact, there is nothing in this story to indicate that they are not perfectly normal humans who maybe set up a colony producing green makeup and bad woolly wigs who fell into a more primitive society based around the stockpile readily to hand after failing to sell their produce. We also learn that the Barnum from Stangmore Prison did recover from his colour treatment to resume his nefarious activity alongside a known adherent of renegade Time Lord Morbius. All in all, The Power of Krall is a highly derivative tale developed out of the Colony of Space and on its way to becoming the Caves of Androzani. It is perhaps overambitious with the visuals that it attempts, but the cast are to be commended for managing to play it seriously throughout. The last method of execution tried is a bit of a stretch, But another innovative guise for the key segment shows the writers were really trying hard to make this story arc work. The canine costume was a big improvement here in his undercover role with the refinery crew. Yeah. And it's a wonder that Lisa managed to get into the previous suit. Some may say it loses sight of the original idea of the character, but I like it and hope they keep it for the remainder of his run. The use of green face may cause concern to some, but it is certainly a relic of the times it was made. This serial was perhaps one episode too short. Oh, Siri, for God's sake. One episode too short, as they clearly budgeted really well, and it was indicated in the closing moments they had a few squid left over after eliminating Kroll. Next up, Doctor Who and the two Romana Dravatralundas. Ha-ha. Or Armageddon
Romana
fed up
with
this King Katon thing. I've done my best. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Oh, I want to mention something else that I forgot.
Uh-oh, but... hang on, Mary, hang on. Yeah, go on.
Well, this isn't bad.
Oh, hang on, Mary.
The green...
Yeah, go on.
You're being so cheeky tonight, Adam.
No, I'm not. Oh, who's being clumsy tonight?
I dropped a pen. I do apologise.
Go on, him.
The green makeup on the Swampies. It had to be water resistant because they were in the swamp and getting rained on and all that. But so it would not wash off.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
So at the end of every shooting day, they had all the Swampies had to report to the local RAF base.
Oh, no. And,
yeah. Use like industrial grade cleaners to get the makeup off. And I guess they suffered a lot of kidding by the RAF people on the base.
They should have asked Lou Ferrigno how he managed it. But there you go. Okay.
I think this was waterproof. Oh, how funny. That's amazing.
Sorry, Kirby.
There were a couple of days where they ran out of the solvent which was used, so they couldn't get the green off.
Oh,
the pub
dear.
That night must have been interesting.
Yes. Laurie Nick says, Bayou. Rob Lansdowne, rather curiously, says, poor Kirby.
Oh, it was when you started the...
No, that was an appropriate interjection of the
lip music. I usually get that.
So, with all that said and done, it's now time this week for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. So, thanks to somebody last week, came up with a brilliant plan of changing the rules slightly so as you can't vote for yourself. Isn't that fantastic? Mary, who do you think's going to win?
Okay, put Debbie the winner and Kirby the loser. They're the only other people than me.
I think we're going to fall foul of this one. Debbie, who do you think's going to win?
I'm going for Kirby the winner, Mary the loser.
Let's see how this pans out. And Kirby, who do you think is going to win?
Debbie, the winner and Mary the loser.
This will be interesting to see how this pans out. Nobody's used their jokers yet.
This change is going to make any difference.
The extra points that had been earned have been lost through general naughtiness. And unusually from Mary. So I'm going to give her a point just for being a bit of a rebel.
Mary wasn't being naughty.
Well, she started off with... She worked her way up to 2 points from being for a couple of really good things. Never mind. Stop arguing, Debbie. Right then, first question goes to... this is trivial questions. I didn't do anything... I haven't got anything for the Power of Kroll. Mary, of whom does the First Doctor say, your arrogance is almost as great as your ignorance?
I think I might know that.
I'll say maybe he says it to Ian.
Yay!
Oh my gosh, okay.
I thought perhaps the playing of a joker might have been good.
Then I changed my vote.
Why, did you think of someone else?
I'm fairly sure of the answer.
Who did you think then, Debbie?
No, I meant change my vote because Mary's going to win.
Oh, you did think it was going to be Ian then?
Based on one question.
I knew it was going to be Ian. I said, I think I know. And I said it was going to be Ian.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
Who did Donna refer to as the fat cat in spats?
Oh, my goodness. I can remember her saying it as well. Mm. Ooh. Don't know offhand.
Anybody?
Nope, don't know.
I don't know.
I can see her saying it. I can see her saying it as well.
If you'd said her boss, I would have given you the points. It was H.C. Clements, her boss.
Oh.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay.
Okay, Kirby.
Master?
In Poison Sky, which is obviously relevant to a certain guest announcement we've had for FantasyCon, what did Atmos stand for?
I didn't know it stood for anything. Atmospheric transformation. I don't know.
Anybody?
Nope.
Okay, the answer was, well, you got the first word, Kirby, so I'm going to give you a point for that.
Yay!
Yeah, it's atmospheric emission system. Okay? No? Okay, well, I'll carry on. That's 3 points in the bonus pot. For this question, what year was President Kennedy assassinated in an event that the Tesselecta crew stated must remain a fixed point in time?
Oh, I think I know.
Go on, Em.
1962.
No.
Hang on, I know. This is all gone funny. There we are. Sorry. This is, no, go on then, Debbie.
1963.
Yes. Oh,
sadly,
I thought everyone knew that. I was good.
Oh, I knew really once you got that one wrong, Mary, you were going to get vilified by Kirby. It's, of course, the tie between...
I knew it was 2 years after he took office, but oh, yeah.
But you weren't thinking of the connection to Doctor Who, which is...
Yeah, the Doctor Who connection. See, I thought both of you were going to jump in to get that, and I wouldn't be fast enough, which is why I wasn't even going to try.
Yeah, right. All right, then. So that was, so Mary's question. Oh, the scores aren't worth mentioning at the moment. No,
well,
one's played their jokers.
That was a bonus, wasn't it?
It was. So it's Mary's question.
This is
Mary's question. Right, right. What is the name of the group of Daleks that mastermind the pig slaves and the Dalek hybrids in Manhattan, Mary? What is their name?
I don't remember.
I know.
Hang on, I think you find Debbie said I know first.
Debbie said
is it
first.
The Cult of Skaro?
Yes, it was. The Cult of Skaro. Debbie,
yes.
Your question is this. What was the Doctor's friend Winston Churchill's middle name?
I know.
Well, I don't know that one. Sorry.
apparently, honestly. Kirby knows.
Spencer.
Right, guess what? Tell that cat to shut up.
I'm trying to. Leia, go away.
The answer is Leonard. His surname was Spencer Churchill. So, Kirby.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Yes, is Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill. Okay, so there's three. Hang on, that was Debbie's question. So it's Kirby's question now.
Master.
On what planet does the Doctor visit and enter his own tomb?
Hang.
Oh, here we go.
Why did I go blank on this one? I should know it.
I think I know this one.
Go ahead.
Beg your pardon, Kirby?
Go ahead.
Right, so we do this. And Debbie says, I think I know this one.
Is it Trenzalore?
Yeah, I knew that one.
Yes. It was indeed Trenzalore.
I wasn't sure, so I didn't speak up.
4 points in the bonus pot.
Use my joker on questions that
aren't. No one's used their joker. Right. Bonus pot question. When Donna and her family are sent to live in Leeds in a parallel world, what number house do they get rehomed in? That's a really difficult one. So I'm going to say you won't get this one.
Yeah, I sure won't get this one.
I sure won't.
Someone have a go, maybe?
Five.
Everybody?
Six.
Nope, it's 29.
Ten.
29 was the answer to that one.
Oh, yeah, we would have got there eventually.
Oh, yeah. So that leaves 6 points now in the bonus pot. We move around to Mary. Oh, the scores. In last place, with 1 point, it's Kirby. In second place, with 3 points, is Mary. But in the lead, with 5 points, it's Debbie. Mary's question.
Debbie, no.
Mary, in Planet of the Ood, how was Guard Commander Kes planning to kill the Ood?
Whoa. Don't remember.
Anybody? It's all gone quiet over there. The answer is he wanted to gas them, but he became a victim of his own plan.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. I don't remember that.
Debbie. I don't remember that either.
Debbie?
Yes. Yes, yes.
Who played the Doctor between 1974 and 1981?
I know.
Jeez, I think we
all know. Go on, you have to say the answer, though.
Thomas Stuart Baker.
What a shame you didn't play your Joker.
I know. Oh, shit.
Ooh, she swore. Right, a point deducted. Hang on, I've got to do the point deduction. There we go.
I wanted to play my Joker.
Oh, you should have done. There we go. Point deduction.
It was just too funny. That's all.
Kirby.
Don't I get extra for doing this all night?
No, you don't. What is the yellow member of the new Dalek paradigm called?
That's Kirby's question.
Yep. Yes. I'm just going to guess that it's the science. I don't know.
Yeah. Anybody?
Eternal.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is why you always win. I remember other kinds of...
I remember it because all I could think of was Teletubbies. And I thought it was La La Darling.
I don't know if there was a Teletubby called the Eternal. Eternally Wernerly.
I called it La La Dalek and then found out it was called the Eternal Dalek. Right. That's why I remembered it.
Right. No one's played their Jokers, and there's 9 points in the bonus pot. For this question. Whose music did the Master dance to while he pushed the aged Doctor around in a wheelchair? You won't get this one. That's quadruple points for this one. Oh dear. Scissor Sisters is the answer to that one. So now there's 11 points in the bonus pot. The point, the scores so far are in last place with 1 point, it's Kirby. In second place with 3 points is Mary. In the lead with 7 points, it's Debbie. This is Mary's question. Mary, when Clara Oswald telephones the best helpline in the universe, who answers the call? Specifically and exactly, rather, as far as what it says on the card. So, who specifically answers the call?
The 10th Doctor? Not the, I'm sorry, the 11th Doctor?
Oh, you got in there just in time before the end of the...
Oh, lucky Mary. He's not normally that kind.
Yeah, it was very, very close to being a little... Yes, but yes, it was indeed the 11th Doctor. Right, then, you should have played your joke. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
Who was Detective Inspector McMillan a long-time pursuer of? You won't get this one.
Who?
Oh, for goodness sake. Who was Detective Inspector McMillan a long-time pursuer of? You won't get this one. Nope. It's all gone very quiet again. I presume the quietness means... The answer is Lady Christina D'Souza.
Oh, well, yes. that wasn't a very good episode, so sorry.
I wouldn't quite go that far. Right then, Kirby.
Just a second. I thought back with Mary's question that it was one of the monks who answered because the bell of St. John was ringing.
I don't know, but I'm going to go with what it says on the card.
Fine.
I think Mary, what Kirby's trying to do there
he
is
to... He did speak to the 11th Doctor, though.
Yeah, the Doctor was dressed as a monk.
Yes, he was. Thank you, Mary. Point for Mary. And guess what?
My question.
Point deducted for Kirby for trying to take a point off Mary rather meanly.
I wasn't trying to take a point off her.
That's your question.
Pedantry strikes again.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
What was the greatest fear of the dead Sontaran that the prisoners of the God Complex find? Dead Sontaran? Oh, yeah.
I don't remember a dead Sontaran.
Well, he died. What was the greatest fear of the dead Sontaran that the prisoners of the God Complex find, Kirby? What was his greatest fear?
Know.
Pardon?
Because I sure don't.
Okay, Kirby doesn't know. Apparently, Debbie does.
No, I don't know. I said I might know. Is it dying of old age?
Oh, hang on. I've got so many buttons to press at the moment. It's defeat is the answer to that question. Defeat. Right then. There are 15 points in the bonus pot. The current scores are: in last place with no points, it's Kirby. In second place with 6 points, it's Mary. And then the lead with 7 points, it's Debbie. Bonus pot question with no one's played their jokers. This question. Oh, God. That can't be the right. This is what it is. You'll have to be very quick. Are you ready? Who played the Doctor between 1970 and 1974?
I know.
Go on in, Kirby.
John Pertwee.
I didn't play his joker. Oh, dear. That was a game changer, wasn't it? Could have been so much different, Kirby.
I didn't finish saying Pertwee before I said Joker.
No. You got to say Joker first.
Excuse me. You let Mary have
one. No. Right then. So the scores now are: in last place with 6 points, Mary. In second place with 7 points, Debbie. In the lead with 15 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes to Mary. What is the name of the black Dalek pet in the Dalek invasion of Earth that roams the mine seeking humans to eat?
Oh, gosh.
No, don't remember.
Okay, does anybody remember?
I remember it, but I don't remember what it was called.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And it's the Slither. Slither was the name of the...
Yeah, I would not have remembered that.
Debbie?
Yeah?
Oh, I've got to find the right question. Here we go. Australian actor Peter O'Brien guest starred in The Waters of Mars, but which of these Australian dramas did he not play a main part in? Was it Home and Away, Flying Doctors, or Neighbours?
Home and Away.
Yes, another one joker. Only someone in Britain would know.
Really? Yeah, but it's an Australian show.
Brit that question. Yes.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
When the Cumbrian monks in 1207 wake the abbot because the bells of St. John are ringing, what sound are they referring to?
Joker.
Yeah?
The cloister bell. No.
Kirby.
I know.
I'm sorry. Can't change it. You said the cloister. I'm sorry, Kirby. Go on, Mary.
Well, he already said it.
What?
It's the telephone.
Your telephone.
It's the TARDIS telephone.
It does indeed. And guess what, Mary? You get all of Kirby's double points. Isn't that nice?
What?
What?
Why?
Because you played your joker and that doubles the points.
Okay.
All right, so, of course, I got so excited by that.
I played my joker, and so she got the joker point.
Yeah, because you got it wrong. Yes? He doesn't like that part of the rolling, I can say. He's gone very quiet.
No, I'm fine with your rules.
My rules? I don't get any benefit
out
of it.
You sound it, too.
Yes, that was correct, Mary. Well done. Right then, so, there's 2 points in the bonus pot for this question. What was the name of the road on which Rose and the Doctor encountered Chloe Weber and the Isolus child?
Isolus.
All right, Isolus.
No idea.
No, I don't know.
No idea.
That was a difficult question. The answer was Dame Kelly Holmes Close.
Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. So still 4 points in the bonus pot as we come round to Mary. Oh, the scores. In last place with 11 points, Debbie. Second place with 10... Sorry, that last place. I'll start again. In last place with 10 points, Mary. Second place with 11 points, Debbie. In the lead with 15 points, it's Kirby. Mary's question.
Wait a second. How is that? But I just really screwed up and I'm still in the lead.
Yeah, you were ahead.
Because you got the bonus pot, which you should have doubled by playing a joker. Only Mary hasn't played a joker. And this is Mary's question. I think it is. Hang on, I've lost the plot now. Where was
I?
Yes,
it is.
It's my question.
Yeah, because they keep putting me off, Mary. In what story does the Doctor encounter the Morpeth Jetson Company? Ooh, difficult one. You won't get this one.
Yeah, I won't get it, no.
Anybody?
Nope.
Okay, it's the Rebel Flesh and Almost People. Debbie Melrose.
Yes.
Who played the... Oh, for God's sake. Who played the Doctor between 1966 and 1969?
I know.
Yeah, right. We all know.
I beg your pardon, Debbie?
I said Patrick Troughton, and I've already got it wrong.
No, it says Peter Cushing on the card badly. No, it does play Patrick.
I'm like, are these trick questions?
Okay, Kirby.
Master.
What legendary group are Khan, Khan, Thay, Jast and Sek?
What? Hang on.
What legendary group are Khan, Thay, Jast and Sek?
Wait, that's... we already answered that. That's the Cult of Skara.
It was a different version of the question.
Yeah.
It has to be awkward, doesn't it, everybody? You can't ever just answer the blimmin' question. Well, it was your question, Kobe, and you answered it correctly, so that's fine. You get 2 points. Right, there's 6 points in the bonus pot for this question. When the Master aged the Doctor by 100 years, what fictional wizard did he call him?
Merlin?
Oh dear. Nope.
I think I know.
Go on in.
Dumbledore?
It's going to be Gandalf. He's the only one left.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was indeed Gandalf, but you're a little bit late there. So whose question that was that for?
All right, that's I always refer to that as the Dobby Doctor.
Oh, well, that was a bonus pot question, wasn't it? Yeah, so
yeah,
8 points down the bonus pot. We move around to the next round of questioning. I just make sure I've got the right card. Here we go. Oh, the scores. In last place with 10 points, Mary. In second place with 13 points, Debbie in the lead with 17 points. It's Kirby, and here's Mary's question. What age was the Master when he was forced to stare into the untempered schism?
I'm going to guess that he was 12.
That would be an incorrect guess.
All right.
Is it 9?
That would be a... Oh, it's not playing it. Oh, there we go. Incorrect guess, but you were very close, eight. Debbie. It was 8, yes. So it's all very well Kirby saying that now when he had an opportunity to say it earlier on. All right. Next question goes
I thought that Mary would get it.
Oh, dear. Well, you could have got it.
Yeah, well...
But you didn't. And it's Debbie's go. What was the name of Edwin Bracewell's old flame who he set out to seek after helping the Doctor defeat the Daleks?
Edwin Bracewell's old flame?
Yeah. What was the name? Edwin Bracewell's old flame who he set out to seek after helping the Doctor defeat the Daleks.
No idea.
Okay, I think that's an acceptable answer. Still wrong. Anybody?
No.
Yeah, okay. Okay, the answer is Dorabella. Okay, that was from that story where the Daleks offered people cups of tea.
Oh, creepy.
I could do with one now, actually. Kirby.
Get some tea.
Kirby.
Master.
If you ever want to dabble in tea, try and get Yorkshire tea. It is the best. You can't get better than Yorkshire tea.
Even their decaf's good.
I don't like decaf stuff, but Yorkshire tea.
What's the point of tea if it's got no caffeine?
Exactly.
It's boring, but you still have to have tea.
I ask the questions in this part of the program. Yorkshire. Thank you very much.
I will find Yorkshire tea.
Right, Kirby, your question.
Master.
The 11th Doctor nicknames River Song Mrs. Robinson after a character in which 1967 movie?
Graduate.
He is correct. Right. Now, girls and boys, we have 12 points in the bonus pot.
Oh, my God.
It is nearly the end of the quiz, and this has to be won, this 12 points.
This is like the Powerball in Mega Millions, okay. You know?
The current scores are in last place. I can't say place. Come on. Mary with 10 points. Second place, Debbie with 13 points in the lead with 19 points. It's Kirby. Mary hasn't played a joker. Mary, if you get this one and play your joker, which I advise you to do, it could be a game changer. The question is... What creature's brain is implanted inside the Peking homunculus, Mr. Sin?
I know.
Go on then.
It's a pig.
It is indeed a pig. Well done, Kirby. Amazing, you got that one right.
One now.
Yeah.
Right. So the current scores are, in last place, 10 points. Actually, point deducted because she didn't use a joker, 9 points. It's Mary. In second place with 13 points, it's Debbie. And in the lead with 31 points, it's Kirby. Right then. Mary predicted Debbie to win and Kirby to be last. That's sad, but not happened. Debbie predicted Kirby to win and Mary to be last.
So she's won.
Kirby predicted Debbie to win and Mary to be last. So the final scores here this week, so you won't get this one, which didn't work too badly with the new rules. In last place with 9 points, Mary. In second place with 52 points, Debbie. But the winner this week with 62 points, it's Kirby.
Oh, because of my prediction of Mary.
Master. Oh, nearly got into the next bit. Yes.
Speaking of fictional wizards, and yes, speaking of this story that we just were talking about, Power of Krull.
Yes.
The swamps involved are close to the village of Snape.
Okay. Wonderful.
In Suffolk.
Is that it?
Yes.
Thank you. Right then, Doctor Who news. Not a lot going on, really. Doctor Who charity anthology, Mythmakers, is out. Books. We got the Doctor Who Training Opportunity, an organisation dedicated to developing new talent in TV and film industry, are offering work placements working on the next series of Doctor Who. Wow. It's a junior graphic designer, costume carpenter, floor runner and TV electrician. That would be fun. Wish I could do that. I'm too old now. Katarina returns for Big Finish. The character of Katarina will be returning to Big Finish, playing alongside Fraser Hines, Wendy Padbury, Peter Purvis, and the bloke who now does the voice for the First Doctor. How fun! And Lethbridge Stewart books, which were out last time I spoke about it, so there we go. As I said, not a lot going on in the worlds of Doctor Who. FantasyCon. We'll just call it FantasyCon. Right, stuff that's happened since last time. Because I haven't got the greatest of memories, means I have to load up the website, which gives me an opportunity to plug it. FANTCCON. Shut up, you maybe got that up. FANTCCON.net. FantasyCon.net. So, we have a little bit of news in regards to Big and Bold Solutions, who have very kindly paid for us to have a massive advert in a advertising spot near Coppins Bridge. We haven't got the advert yet. Oh, that's my bell. That was a bell especially for Roy at Big and Bold Solutions.
Yay, Roy!
We haven't got the advert yet, but it's in July, so we've got a bit of time to set it up. So thanks to him for that. The other thing I found out today that... Right, I'll give you a bonus pretend point if you can get who gets the nearest to how much event insurance is going to cost. Go on then, Kirby, you can have your first go.
I have no idea.
Thanks for that. Ballpark figure, event insurance.
I don't know how
much. Oh, go
much
on, have a go, go on.
It's
a bit of fun. You won't look silly if you get it wrong. Go on.
£1.
Thank you for that rubbish answer. Debbie, how much do you think event insurance might cost?
I'm thinking like £200, okay, if not more.
Mary, how much do you think event insurance would cost?
£500.
Okay. Somewhere within the region of £6,500 event insurance. So there we go. This is why people who are not buying tickets yet should consider buying it, because without the ticket money, we can't get the insurance to actually have the event.
Come on, peeps.
Buy your tickets.
What is the insurance covering? What is it buying?
It covers all sorts of things. Public liability and all those and those.
Safety.
Of
yeah, safety goodness.
Employee insurance.
That much of a freak.
It's quite expensive. More expensive than all the guests all put together in one bucket. Yes, so and people are liking the page and saying how much they're looking forward to it, but not actually buying the tickets. So, come on, peeps. Let's have an event. Buy some tickets. Well, it's going
to
be spent
I'm
on.
Going round to
the like I said before, it's being spent on the event, not on anything else. So
yeah, but it's only March. You know, people will get more excited about it. The
absolutely,
closer to it
but
get.
Without the insurance, we can't have the event. It's that is that. Christopher Ryan has been announced as a guest at our event.
Yay!
Now, those of you who don't know who he is, he was in the Young Ones. He played Mike. There we go. Wait for Kirby to take in the bait. Just reeling Kirby in, reeling him in.
What?
I've just said, oh, never mind. Normally you can't resist the opportunity to say, ah, but he was in Doctor Who. Yes, of course he was in Doctor Who. He's been in several episodes of Doctor Who.
He was in the one with the Atmos, which we named a few
minutes
ago.
Yes, he was. But he's also played several Sontarans in several episodes of Doctor Who.
Hello.
Yes? You said hello, I said hello. That was at the beginning of the episode, Kirby.
Oh, I lost my teeth. Hello.
Oh, shush. I was going to go hello now. For God knows.
Okay, I lost the speakers there for a second. That's so.
Yes. Can I continue? Yes, he played Lord Kiv. Lord Kiv in Mind Warp, but he's also played several Sontarans in the modern era of Doctor Who, and he's a very nice chap.
Played the Sontaran in the one story.
No, he played Sontaran in the. He was in the Pandorica Opens, or one of those two stories. He played one. He has played. And I think he was in Sarah Jane Adventures as well.
Playing yes, he was.
So, Kirby. Alistair Pearson, Ben Shoveler, Joe Lofthouse, Andrew Smith, Robert Sherman, of course, heroes providing
and
us
me.
With some gub. What do you mean, you?
I'm there.
Yeah, but you're not a guest. Although...
You're making me go on stage.
Yeah, we'll be needing some trusty people to sit with our guests to make sure that they're... Because Bonnie's given me a list of, you know, how much money that the guests take at their tables, because obviously that's deducted from how much we owe them at the end of the event. So I need somebody trustworthy to keep track of that for me. Mike, Martin Ballantyne.
Hey, Master.
Oh, no. I nearly got to the end of the guest list. Yes?
Yes.
Can you hear?
Yes, sadly.
Yeah. Yes, I have the Young Ones.
You do?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Martin Ballantyne, who is in Harry Potter and with Heath Ledger in that film with Heath Ledger. What's that one called? Dark Knight?
Batman.
Aaron Eisted, who's an amazing magician. Davros is there. Well, the dead version. And of course, we've got the 51st Legion, Isla White, Garrison, who are just amazing. Alan T. Butch is coming, but he's not on my guest list because he's bought a ticket. He's done something that rarely people have done. He's bought a ticket for the event. So I think let's double check. Clive Burrows is coming.
Yes.
On.
Oh, that's
he's
brilliant.
A very good artist. Local. Very
I love
stuff.
Seeing him at work in the works. I think that's brilliant when he's in there.
K9 is coming.
Yay.
And somebody read between the lines in the K9 announcement thought that the actual John Leeson was coming along to the event, which I thought was amusing.
I thought I saw that one of your little squares.
It says character announcement, come and see K9 voiced mostly by the amazing John Leeson. That's what
I saw one of those squares, like the ones that you have Christopher Ryan in. I thought I saw one that said John Leeson.
Maybe you dreamt it. You could have dreamt that.
I dreamt it.
I think you could have done. You never know. And the funniest one that I thought I really enjoyed, and I didn't even realise at the time, was when I put Baker announcement, and it was about Island Cake Studio and their amazing cakes, and somebody thought I was announcing that a baker was attending the event. I can tell you, before everybody gets too excited, Tom Baker will not attend events outside London. And if he did, it will only be, whatever event he attends, it's only for one day. So there's no chance whatsoever that Tom Baker's coming. So if we were to get a baker that wasn't doing a cake, it would only be Colin anyway. So. Although that was hilarious. Somebody actually thought that it was going to be Tom or Colin, wouldn't it? Because it said Baker announcement.
But I know. There was a beautiful picture of the cake. I was like,
That's about it for an announcement. This I'm quite excited about. Obviously Christopher Ryan coming along because watched him many years, and
that is if you get the insurance.
Oh my
god!
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's quite expensive, isn't it?
Me neither. I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to do it.
We're going to get... How much shall I say it was?
6,000.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, right, so it's quite a lot of money for the insurance. Yeah. Need to sell some tickets, really, don't we?
Yes.
I have a question about your tea recommendation.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You both are saying Yorkshire is the Yorkshire best tea. Where do the P&G tips fall in your estimation?
Too bad. Sort of mediocre standard tea,
P&G
really.
P&G tips are okay. They sort of went a bit downhill, so we stopped having them as a family, and we moved on to Yorkshire tea, and that's just a golden cup.
It's a bit of a transition, isn't it? You get Tetley, Tetley, then you get to PG, and then you get up to Yorkshire, and you can't really go back from there.
You sort of, I think you segue off into Typhoo a bit as well,
Typhoo's below Tetley for me.
Yorkshire tea just seems to be the one that we've favoured for well over a decade now.
I agree.
Unfortunately, I can't have any caffeine now, but I need something that still tastes like tea or coffee. So Yorkshire tea is
Well, because it was recommended to me that the most popular tea in all of England is the P&G.
It probably is PG, yes, but that's because it's been around for a long time. But people have had Yorkshire tea. Won't go back because you've had it. That's it. It is.
It's a bit salt con actually. If we've run out of Yorkshire and there's only PG around.
PG is fine, but by way of choice, it would be Yorkshire. One last thing about Fantasy Con is Anthony Griffiths posted this lovely picture of his Dalek, his Cassandra, his Ood, and his Davros all together outside his garage. So that's rather cool, and they're all coming.
Yeah.
Yes. There you go. So that's it for that. I suppose we could mention the sponsors.
Is that Who Want Dakota? UK?
Is, but I don't think they're going to come to the event. But they are sponsoring us for another year.
Why aren't they going to come?
Aren't they just right there, a few steps away?
I think they want to go online instead of having a retail outlet. But they're still sponsoring us, and they've still got things like Doctor Who Magazine 536 available, which has a picture of the second Doctor with Polly and Jamie on the cover. We've got New Countermeasures Hollow King, which is the team that were in Resurrection of the Daleks. Is it Resurrection? Remembrance of the Daleks. There's some Blake 7 stuff coming out. And stuff like that. That's all in the coming soon. We've got Diary of River Song 5, First Doctor Adventures 3, which obviously features David Bradley, Chameleon Empire, Monsters of Gotcroth, and Warrior's Gate. So all exciting things. Among the things that they sell, rather specialistically. Was that a word, Debbie?
I don't know.
As specialists, the Target novels. And stuff like that is all. They're book specialists, really. So if you want a Doctor Who book, and lots of people love Doctor Who books, that's the place to get it. They have all the best books there, all brand new, all smell like a lovely smell of the new book. You know, when you just get it, doesn't smell like that for long. It's a bit like a new car, isn't it? That doesn't smell like that for long. Our other sponsors are Lavazzi. Now I haven't actually sorted it out yet. I have channeled their sponsorship money for the podcast into the convention this year. That therefore makes them a sponsor of the convention, even if they don't supply us with any gubbins for it. But yes, I've decided to use the money for that. And hoping that we might have some of those amazing scarves on sale in the Lord of Time Con part of Fantasy Con. So come along. There'll be loads of stuff there for you to see. It's mainly a Doctor Who convention anyway, so it fits the clientele of this podcast rather well. And it's Bank Holiday weekend. It's the Isle of Wight. It'll be really hot and lovely. And if you come down for that weekend, you can come to the event on the Saturday, get up early on the Sunday morning, watch the powerboat race, and then come up to the event. Isn't that great, Debbie?
Yep.
I had an idea, actually, sending some stormtroopers down the seafront to drum up interest in the morning. But yeah, we'll see what happens. So, has anybody got anything else to say before I see if anybody said anything on the thread? Oh, great. Nope. Nobody's got anything to say at all. Okay. So, next time it's the Armageddon Factor.
Yep.
It's a six-part story. So I'm just going to see what's going on in the diary. Well, it's Mother's Day next week.
Oh.
Oh, yes, I'm probably going to be busy.
Question?
Yes.
Your time changes next Sunday.
It does, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll be back to our standard time on this end.
Yeah, I'm not probably not going to be able to come on because we're going to go and do something with Tom's mum, so no.
Yeah, I don't think it's appropriate to do that. I'm just going to check. I've got a gig with Angela McLuckie's family, a photographic one, the following week. So I'm thinking I might not be able to do then either. So we might have to have a little small hiatus until... Oh, I've got a wedding that day. It's a pre-wedding shoot. I'm off on holiday anyway. Right, so 14th of April we can do, because I'm off on holiday and I've only got a pre-wedding shoot in the afternoon. So that evening I should be available. So
well, I have to let you know the first weekend of May I'm in Naples. So
what's that
I've
got to do with April? We're not in May yet, you silly woman.
I know, but I'm just letting you know ahead of time that I'm not going to be able to come on because I will be in Pompeii. So there you go.
Okay, well, careful of that volcano.
Okay. I will be.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, just a quick few days away with my mum and my dad and my two sisters, just us. So,
I wish I could go there. I'd always wanted to see all that Pompeii stuff.
Well, I'll give it a good recce and see if it's worth where it's worth going and things like that. So there you go. Because I'd like to take Isla and Tom. So, yeah.
Okay. Just watch out for pyro valves.
So, yes, that's what I was just about to say that myself. So it looks like, everybody, it'll be the 14th of April, our next recording. Sorry about that. So hopefully a few developments in the FantasyCon front. But until then, thank you for watching and listening to the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.